Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday afternoon. Criminal records in this country are pretty easy to access, and if you have a record, even for arrest without conviction, you may suffer many negative consequences. It's hard to find a job, it's hard to get housing and financial aid. This hour, we'll have two guests with us, an assistant professor of human development and social policy at Northwestern University. Her latest research paper is titled Indefinite Punishment and the Criminal Record Stigma Reports Among Expungement Seekers in Illinois. Later, the president of Clean Slate Milwaukee, a second chance organization that provides reentry services for young adults who have misdemeanor or nonviolent felony convictions, and one of those services is expungement of records. Some of these statistics just amaze me. Almost half, 49% of black males are arrested by the age of 23, 38% of white males. And black males with criminal backgrounds are judged much more harshly by employers than their white counterparts. That's a large number of people being arrested, isn't it? We'll talk about that in so many other areas here. And welcome your phone calls, as we always do. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Professor Simone Ispilanda is with us in our studios, assistant professor of human development and social policy at Northwestern University. A lot of her work investigates how people in stigmatized communities understand dominant ideologies, particularly within urban-rural divides in school systems. I told you what the name of her latest study is, and she holds a PhD in sociology from Harvard University. Professor Ispilanda, thank you very much for joining us in our studios here in Milwaukee.
Thank you. It's such a pleasure.
Very nice to have you here. I'm amazed, if we could just start by the large number of people, particularly males, who are arrested. That's a huge percentage of people who are arrested.
Yeah, I have to say, when I started this research, the statistic that one in three Americans has a criminal record just dumbfounded me. I had no idea, and I also had no idea that you could have an arrest simply, that you could have a criminal record just from being arrested. So it's really problematic, because we know that arrest happens in low-income communities of color, and so this is a real social justice issue for some of our communities.
And if you have this record, it'll be an arrest and maybe not a conviction for the arrest, but all of that is part of your record as well.
Yeah, exactly. So it is a criminal record, and a lot of people don't even realize it. So, for example, when I was interviewing people who were seeking expungement, a lot of them only found out that they had a criminal record when they were fired from a job and went to go get a new job. And a criminal record popped up on the internet, and they said, I can't believe I have a criminal record. I was never convicted of anything. And lo and behold, they did, because they had been arrested.
Mm-hmm. So you studied two different groups. Tell me who you studied.
So we studied, all of the people in our study were people who were seeking expungement in Illinois. Half of them had very, very minor criminal records. So these were people who had only been arrested, or they had been arrested and the case had been dismissed, or they had been convicted of something, of a misdemeanor. So some of the things were things like having a very small amount of marijuana, and it had been dismissed. And the other half of the sample had very extensive criminal records, so with multiple felony convictions and sometimes prison sentences. But what I found with my co-author was that all of these people, regardless of the severity of their criminal record, faced very serious challenges to getting housing, to getting employment, to accessing financial aid. So the criminal record really held them back in a number of areas.
Mm-hmm. So is it standard practice, or does it really vary from employer to employer, that you are asked immediately at your first job interview, do you have to fill it out on a form? Do you have a criminal record?
So it looks like it varies by employer, and that state laws also vary about what employers are allowed to ask. We found that a lot of people actually kind of tried to escape this involuntary disclosure that's required when you're asked if you have a criminal background by turning to a kind of low-wage labor market where they weren't asked, so side jobs in the formal economy, things like flooring or fixing cars. But most big box retailers ask, and that's where a lot of people want to get jobs.
Mm-hmm. And what about in housing? What about for school?
So for housing, it's a problem because at least in Illinois, the Chicago Housing Authority asks people if they have a criminal background record. And so people who are looking for subsidized housing were often facing very serious challenges in getting affordable housing because of a criminal record.
And do they define what that criminal record is? Does it have to be a felony or a misdemeanor? No, just a criminal record.
It could just be the arrest.
Yeah.
So Yeah.
So did you find in your study that there was a disparity, a racial disparity here?
Well, most of our sample was African-American, and that's consistent with nationwide trends. And we know that black people experience police contact at much higher rates than others. So I think that reflects just nationwide trends in police contact.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the people we spoke to also, I should also say, they told us about kind of traumatic arrest experiences, so being arrested and kind of the arrest itself being a kind of humiliating encounter with the police. So things like being slammed up against a police car for something that they hadn't done, feeling like they were arrested without probable cause. So there were a number of sort of narratives about not just the criminal record being an unfair burden, but also just the nature of even how the criminal record had kind of come to happen felt very humiliating to a lot of people.
And did you also find that, I don't know how long a period you studied them for, but that this record would stay with a person, so it would go beyond a couple of years, it would just be there for a long time?
Yeah. So some of the sort of the saddest stories were people in their 60s or 70s who had criminal records from when
really? They, 60s or 70s?
Who had criminal records from maybe drug dealing in their 20s or prostitution in their 30s, things like this. They had completely gone clean. They had been through rehab. Some of them had served prison sentences. And now they couldn't get jobs. And some of them were, like, there was one woman, she was a grandmother who had been a former prostitute over 20 years ago. And she had no police contact, no criminal justice contact, no arrest since that time. And now she was looking for a job at Walgreens and couldn't get one. And she wanted it to help support her grandchildren. So we heard a lot of stories of people who had really old cases that were really following them throughout their lives.
And they felt they had no recourse? They didn't know what to do about it?
Well, they had come to the expungement help desk where I was interviewing people to try to get help to get rid of it. But for those of them who had felony convictions from years past, they couldn't. They weren't eligible for expungement.
Mm-hmm. Is that true? In all states?
It varies by state.
It does.
So in Illinois, certain felony convictions can never be expunged. So a 70-year-old who has cases from their 20s, if they're certain kinds of felony convictions, that's on there for life.
Hmm. Also joining us in our studio is Chanyelle McLeod, and she is president of Clean Slate Milwaukee. It's a second chance organization providing reentry services for young adults between the ages of 17 and 25 who have misdemeanor and nonviolent felony convictions. The goal is to reduce recidivism by breaking the school-to-prison pipeline. And as you know, the statistics for the state of Wisconsin are pretty amazing, that we have the highest number of African Americans in jail than any other state in the country. And the work that she's doing is trying to get expungement here for some of these young people. Chanyelle, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, our pleasure. Tell me those statistics in the state of Wisconsin that we have a huge number of African American men in prison, higher than any other state. Is that right?
Yes, and I always say that not only are we the highest in the United States, but if the United States have a higher, you know, prison rate of the rest of the world, then we're actually the highest in the world. So basically, Wisconsin actually incarcerates more African American people, not just men, but women also, than any other place in the world, not just the United States.
Mm-hmm. So you're working with young men particularly, or young people who are between the ages of what, 17 and what?
The ages of 17 and 25. And the reason why we focus in on that particular age group is because that's where the Wisconsin expungement law is. I'm a paralegal, but I've also been researching the issue of expungement since 2007. And since then, I've seen where the Wisconsin expungement law has expanded in 2009, which included, you know, felony convictions for the first time ever in Wisconsin history, which is pretty historical because prior to 2009, it was out of the question to get a felony expunged. It was only for misdemeanors 21 and under. Mm-hmm. And if you had a felony, you had to seek out a governor for a pardon, which still did nothing for removing the record from the public database. If you have a pardon, it is you merely restores your rights, your right to vote. I mean, I'm sorry, your right to bear arm, your right to hold public office, and the right to vote and the right to jury trial automatically came back when you were off probation and or parole. But it still did nothing for employment, housing, higher education. Expungement is important because for some of the reasons that the other guest spoke to, affordable housing, you know, is definitely a barrier. In the state of Wisconsin, when it comes to housing, people who have criminal records are an unprotected class. There's nowhere to even file a claim of discrimination because you're unprotected. There's nowhere to go to complain. You're just out. So, you know, housing is an issue as well as employment. So right now in Wisconsin, I've been researching this and trying to push, you know, for the expungement to expand for the reasons that she spoke of earlier. And I also wanted to chime in on what she was saying about our senior adults. When you have that record from the 70s or early 80s and have done nothing since, and now that you're in your 60s, maybe 70s now, and you're ready to go into a senior living, and guess why you can't?
Because of a felony
from 30, 40 years ago.
So what would be fair, Simone? Should there be expungement for violent offenders, or should there be a time limit after 40 years, if you're 30 years or 10 years and your record is clean? Let's start with you. I want to hear from both of you, but Simone, what do you think?
Well, so research does show, actually, that after a certain period of time, a criminal record is no longer predictive. So I think that the fact that we allow, partially because of technological changes, actually, we allow the criminal record to really shadow people for their whole lives is really problematic. So a person who has not been in any trouble for a long period of time, I don't think it's fair. I think the other issue is the fact that criminal records record arrests without convictions is really problematic. I mean, we kind of pride ourselves on being a society where, you know, innocent until proven guilty.
Right.
But it's certainly not innocent until proven guilty. If you have a criminal record that's really a label and a stigmatizing label that follows you just from having been arrested when
that's
there's
right.
been no conviction.
Yeah. So how did that happen, that if you have not been convicted, I mean, how did that become a part of the whole system here? If you haven't been convicted, then how can this be something that doesn't work in your favor for your whole lifetime?
Well, we have the infamous, notorious CCAP, right?
Yes.
So what happens is you can be arrested. You know, we're the typical, what they call that, okay, so let's say you're arrested, right? And you go through trial or, you know, they see that it's not you. After investigation, the courts ruled that that was not you and charges were not pressed. But that record is still there.
Mm-hmm.
It's still there on CCAP. Yeah, it says this is dismissed, or on the Crime Information Bureau and the Department of Justice database. It says it's dismissed, but the charge is still there.
Mm-hmm.
So why not remove that? When that person leaves out of the courtroom, mm-hmm. why not just dispose of that record right then? Why leave that to be lingering and linger? It's irrelevant information that has a great deal of relevance when it comes time to getting a job. I just wanted to also make mention that, you know, at Clean Slate, we say that without expungement, every sentence is a life sentence, whether you were convicted or not. And so not only have I been researching Wisconsin's expungement law, but I've also been researching our surrounding states and other states around the country expungement laws as well. And I know that in Texas, you know, if you committed a felony, nonviolent, non-sexual violent felony, after 5 years, you have the opportunity for expungement. Other states do the same thing. After 10 years, you have that opportunity for expungement.
Mm-hmm.
If someone have not committed a crime in 10 whole years, they are obviously not a criminal. They're obviously not at risk or of harming our society. So why not give that second chance? We're actually harming society by not
mm-hmm.
giving that second chance, because that person don't have a chance to pay in to the tax base and be a self-sufficient, productive citizen.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk more about, I don't know if Illinois has this CCAP where you can look up somebody's arrest record. You just go on the computer and see if somebody's been arrested. And I don't know if Illinois has
sure.
that.
So the privacy laws are different by state.
Sure.
And actually, one thing I was going to say when you said, how did this come about, I was thinking that, you know, it used to be that police records were kept very locally. And so one thing we found when we were doing some historical research is actually that the kind of the national aggregation of police databases and the posting of them online in the absence of strong privacy law is kind of part of what has led to this problem, because criminal records have been around for a long time and people had criminal records, but they could actually escape the stigma. And so part of what I think we're seeing is kind of this unfortunate confluence of factors with, you know, lack of privacy law, technological advance, and then these databases that get these national databases that just get online.
Yeah. Let's hear some stories, because both of you, you did interviews with so many people who had criminal records, and I know you've done very interesting interviews with people who have committed crimes, sometimes nonviolent crimes, many years ago, and they're trained to be, they can't even get work in something they've trained for because of this. Did you hear a lot of that, that people have tried to change their lives, receive training, and simply could not find employment?
Yeah, I think, I mean, from my personal perspective, some of the saddest stories I heard were people who had really gone, there was one woman who said, you know, I'm not that same person anymore.
Right.
I'm a different person. That's not me. And I've done all this work. I've been in rehab. I went to prison. Like, I'm really not that person. I'm really this upstanding citizen, but I can't really fulfill my obligations to my family because this is holding me back.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we saw a lot of people who had put a lot of work into really becoming people that they couldn't really realize. They couldn't fully realize the person they wanted to be because of this criminal record.
Mm-hmm. Chanyeol, how about you?
Every day, all day. That's what I do.
Every day, all day.
Yes, I mean, because that's what we do at Clean Slate. We get calls from people that feel like they've been wronged and not being able to get that interview, or if they get the interview, you know, that criminal record always comes up. Always, no matter how long ago, no matter what it was for, you know, sometimes, you know, a felony is a felony regardless of what it was for. And even on CCAP, there's a notice to employers. It says, against the law to use this record against this person if it's not substantially related. So it really has to be substantially related to that position. So if I robbed a bank, okay, no, I cannot work at U.S. Bank, but why I cannot do data entry somewhere else? And so what gets me is the higher education, and that's what really burns me up, because you have people that, like I said, you know, you get out the bed, they're motivated to do, you know, do well, they want to go to school, and they're about to graduate or get into their internships, and bam, they can't even do it. They can't even go to the internships or can't even graduate because of their criminal record. And I think it's horrible. I think that you can't even get into certain schools through admissions. You know, that you have to check the box. Have you ever been convicted? It's not just on employment applications, but it's on admissions applications at universities as well. So what are we really doing? Like, really, like, what are we really doing? Like, why would we ever want to hinder someone that wants to personally advance through education?
Mm-hmm.
Why would we want to do that?
And I'm wondering if anybody has done a study, Professor, answer this if you know of anybody, to look at recidivism rates of people who have this kind of background, can't get it expunged, and maybe can't find a job, so they return.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if there's a particular study on that with the criminal record. There's a lot of evidence that ex-felons who can't find work mm-hmm. sometimes return to crime, but a lot of the people that I saw coming through who need expungement really don't have any felony convictions. They just have minor misdemeanors. So I think in their case, what they do is they return to kind of work in the gray economy. So things like babysitting or catering, so things that are off the books.
Right.
Because they were never really involved in crime in the first place. So
Right. They
might have an arrest for, like, selling loose cigarettes or for loitering or public, you know, mm-hmm. disorderly conduct. So for them, there's really no real crime to return to. They were always fairly law-abiding people who kind of happened to get arrested and maybe convicted for something very minor. Mm.
Let's go to the audience. We'll do this in just a moment. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. We're talking about criminal background checks that really can provide a life sentence for someone, even though they may not even serve time. They maybe were arrested and were not convicted of a crime because these criminal records are very easily accessible, and this can really hang around your neck for when you're looking for a job or you'd like to go to school or you'd like to find housing. We're talking about expungement, how records can be expunged, why they are in some states and why they aren't, those records that should be expunged, those that shouldn't. What do you think? And perhaps because so many people have criminal records. How many people have criminal records? Did I read one-third?
One in three Americans
has a criminal. So it affects a huge number of people.
And I actually have a study that was done by the University of Milwaukee that says that there's 29,000 people in just Milwaukee County. Just in Milwaukee County. And this was a 2009 study. So it has only grown since then. So that means that we're surrounded by people that have criminal records. We're surrounded by them.
Right.
And it's not even limited to just a race, because I would be the first one to I'd be the first one to tell you that there's white people, there's Hmongs, there's Latinos, there's every nationality of people that are hindered. They're just hindered in different ways. I have Hmong young ladies coming to me saying that they can't even graduate. That pulls me. You know, the Latinos, or you have young people that can't even get into the fire police cadets, where they want to be firewomen and police women, but they can't because they had a fight in high school. You know, and they have these, and tickets. Don't get me started on tickets. Tickets can harm you also. Regular municipal city ordinance tickets.
Really?
Yes. Can stop you in education, jobs. It's horrible. The access to these records and was how people use them against people are horrible.
We'll take phone calls. We have all four lines going. It's a big topic, I can tell. Our number is 800-486-8655. We have two guests with us, Professor Simone Espalanda. She's an assistant professor of human development and social policy at Northwestern University and has done a research paper titled Indefinite Punishment and the Criminal Record, Stigma Reports Among Expungement Seekers in Illinois. It was published, or will be published very soon, in the Journal of Criminology. Chanyel McLeod is president of Clean Slate Milwaukee. It's a second chance organization. She's working, as you heard her say, on expungement all day long, every day, and providing reentry services for young adults between the ages of 17 and 25 who have misdemeanor or nonviolent felony convictions. To you, momentarily, this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to phone calls. We have many of them coming in, and we start with Lori in Madison. Hi, Lori.
Hi. I want to thank the ladies that are doing the magnificent work they're doing on behalf of people that need this assistance. I was a nice Jewish girl from Skokie, Illinois in the early 80s and was arrested three times and found convicted of disorderly conduct that was related to drinking and domestic issues. I still, you know, as and I graduated from UW, became a teacher, but every application or reapplication for my teaching license asked the same questions about my convictions of disorderly conduct. I had, and I retired as a school teacher as well, and now I'm looking for part-time work. They're still finding that information about me from the early 80s, and I have since quit drinking. You know, I obviously am a transformed individual, but, you know, I'm a white woman, you know, I could only imagine what it's like for people of color that are dealing with this issue, with the discrimination that's already present.
And have you tried, Lori, to get this expunged?
Well, one of the records was supposed to be expunged, and for whatever reason, it still shows up.
It's not an automatic thing. Sometimes people, the judge will say, if you complete probation successfully, you come back and we'll have this record expunged. A lot of people.
And I had Paul Soglin as my lawyer.
Really?
It's not an automatic thing. It's something you literally have to return back to the courts to do yourself, unless you have a lawyer that does that for you. But you still have to be involved.
And parking tickets, and the re-registration. I mean, that is another unbelievable hindrance. It's kind of like being bankrupt. You know, it keeps snowballing.
Professor Espalanda, what do you recommend?
I would try to get that expunged and sealed. I'm so sorry to hear this story. This is like a dime a dozen. I hear these stories about people who did things when they were younger that they regret and they've moved on, and it really does shadow them in today's world with the lack of
privacy. People really do change. You know, you're not the same person you were from 20 to 30 and 30 to 40. You're not the same person at all. And why? You know, why would we want to hold someone that's probably the head of the household, you know, still on a hook for something they did probably 20, 30 years ago?
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for your call, Lori. Let's go to Heather and Racine next. Hi, Heather.
Hi. I kind of wanted to give my perspective, which isn't all that different from the previous caller. In 2005, I was accused of child abuse by my husband's ex-wife, and a lot of people don't know that anybody can pretty much accuse anybody of anything, and if you're kind of ignorant about the system and you have no money for a good lawyer, it can spiral out of control. I was not even arrested or investigated, and 6 months later, a summons came in the mail saying I was had to go to court. I was being charged with felony child abuse. And needless to say, it devastated my entire life. She ended up recanting, but the DA did not care. I don't know if they needed some convictions under his belt or what, but being on CCAP in Wisconsin is definitely a life sentence, because I pled down to a misdemeanor because I had a baby at home and I was young. I had never even had a speeding ticket in my life, and I just needed it to go away. I just wanted it to be done with. It was so devastating. And that was a horrible mistake. I should have never pled. I should have fought it. But anyway, as far as jobs go, as far as just the mental and emotional, when I want to volunteer in my daughter's school, I have to plead to all these people who I don't even know, and it's so humiliating. I was going into the social work program at the time, and I was told, you'll never get a job, so you might as well find something else. And my whole life I wanted to work in social work and then run for local office, which obviously I can't do that either. So really it devastated my whole life, and here it is 11 years later, and I'm still emotional about it.
Have you tried to get legal help now? Do you have any recourse?
I was told that no, there's really nothing that I can do. I've written to, I work in the political world in my area, and so I've talked to even senators and representatives, and, you know, I've written countless letters, and because I was charged with a felony, but convicted with a misdemeanor, it puts me in a weird, I guess, catch-22 where it can't really be expunged, and it's always going to be on CCAP, and I guess I would probably need a whole lot of money and a really good attorney,
right.
And I don't even know if that would do any good.
Yeah, Simone?
Oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah, we hear this all the time. I had a lot of people at the expungement help desk who said the amount of money it would take me to really take care of this is beyond my means, which is another part of the unfairness of this system, is that it's so complicated to get some of these charges removed. And they don't always get removed satisfactorily. So we need a systemic change.
Chanel?
Well, the thing about the state of Wisconsin is even though our motto is forward, we are so far behind. We are so far behind when it comes to second chances and redemption. You know, this is a pure example of a person that obviously is not a criminal. Just both callers, they're not criminals, but they're still being haunted by something that happened. In her case, probably never even happened. A decade later, more than a decade later. And so, and like she said, I hear those calls all the time, almost every single call. And, you know, one thing that we're pushing to do on the legislative level, which is the state level, is, you know, we're pushing to have anything that's, you know, anything that's over 10 years old to be expunged. Right now, the statute of limitation of how long felonies stay on CCAP is 75 years. 75 years. So who can wait 75 years for their stuff to be removed off of CCAP, or 20 years if it's a misdemeanor? It's just that's unreasonable. So if we fight as a community together, whether it be the legal community, the academic community, and just the regular street level community, if we fought together in the legislature and say, look, this is not something that just affects just the inner city of Milwaukee. This is someone from Dane County and Racine County that just called in that it's affected the same ways. So if we speak a little bit louder to our legislators in Madison and say, look, this is something that affects the whole state of Wisconsin and its progression in a positive way, I think we should be able to get some things done in the future.
Now, there are some who would say that if you have committed a certain, and thank you very much, Heather, for your call. If you've done an offense that's very, very bad, that's a felony conviction for a violent offense, maybe it is something that you should pay for and have it on your record for the rest of your life, that you did something that bad, you're going to pay the price for it. Should there be a price, and what should be a price for somebody who's been convicted of a violent felony? Simone?
Yeah, I'm actually a little agnostic about it because I think sometimes we see false accusations, and I think people can change. I think there are some things that could be out in the public. I think things like rape, sexual assault, murder can... I see that there's an argument there for those things to be on the records, but I saw so many people coming through who had things that were so minor, or things they did, like prostitution, that really they were harming themselves, and they've moved on, or selling drugs. I mean, the majority of the cases that I saw involved drugs, and it was really cases of addiction and selling very small amounts of narcotics. So I think the majority of the people who are affected by the criminal record are being unfairly burdened. And there might be a very small population of people who, you know, maybe it's helpful to society that we know that. But for the most part, I think we're talking about people who are really paying a price for something they've already paid a price for.
That's right.
Chanel, you agree?
I 100% agree. And I will also add that, people that... you know, okay, so let's just say I say the word felony. If you were to close your eyes and think, like, what is a felon? You know, and you were to get this image in your head, and then you wake up and you open your eyes and you see people like our callers that just called in, it doesn't match, right? So what we have to do is remove, you know, what the image is of a felon, first of all, because it's, you know, you hear felony, you hear crime, mm-hmm. you hear someone that's a murderer, rapist, mm-hmm. or evildoer, when actually that's not even the case. A lot of the times there'd be drug related, you know, operating a car without owner's consent, fleeing from officer, you don't pull over in time when the police get behind you, or just minor low-level things like that. They're not out, you know, killing people. I very rarely, honestly, in my 5 years of researching records, just pulling community, you know, members' records and just seeing, it's very rare that I see violence. Is, you know, there is some child abuse here and there, but for the most part, I would say 80% of our clientele is ex-drug dealers, people who sold weed in the neighborhoods, THC. In the state of Wisconsin, second arrest for a THC is a felony conviction, regardless of
is
the amount.
Really?
Regardless of the amount. So we're not talking about kingpins. We're talking about local neighborhood drug dealers, weed dealers, that if you know the landscape of Milwaukee, you know there's not a lot of jobs here in the first place. Rent is still due. We Energy still want their money, regardless if you found a job or not. So money has to be made, and that's what happened. So you have, because of the war on drugs, it's kind of what has flooded our prison systems, drug charges.
Yes. Yeah, and that's true, isn't it? A huge number of people in prison now are there because of what you just outlined.
Yeah. I mean, the majority of the people who came through the expungement help desk in Illinois were drug charges mostly.
Right.
The other thing I would say, I did actually interview a man who had murdered somebody in his late teens. He was part of a gang, and he was now in his 60s, and he wanted a job as a janitor. And he had clearly outlived his kind of the part of a person's life when they're prone to violence, if they are at all, and was not at all involved in anything illegal. And in that case, it seems like it only hurts society to not allow him to work as a janitor and make a decent living.
What had he done with his life, Simone?
So he had been in prison. He had left prison, and he had been working on cars on and off. He had been homeless for different spells. He had had a really tough life, and had trouble reading, had trouble writing, and wanted a job as a janitor. And the criminal record was a problem for him in doing that.
Let's go to Stephen in Stevens Point. Hi, Stephen.
Hi, Kathleen. I really appreciate the work that these two women are doing. I'm a criminal defense attorney, and I get to see this firsthand on a daily basis. You were mentioning or asking a question about research. There actually is a study that was recently done by the law school at Florida State University that says, or they found that with expungement, when there is some significant work that has to be done in order to get expungement, the recidivism rate is drastically lower. So it does work, and it does do a great deal of good for those who take it seriously and do what's necessary to get expungement. In the state of Wisconsin, the Department of Justice has a crime information bureau, and they keep arrest and conviction records. Even expunged cases remain in their databases. And so criminal records checks that are done through their service will still show that information. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a really limiting situation in the state of Wisconsin for people who are convicted of minor crimes and are eligible for expungement. And they don't always understand when they enter into agreements to do this that a moderately thorough criminal background check will still show that arrest and conviction record.
Chanel?
What he's saying is actually right. It's actually right. The only thing that you can have removed from the Department of Justice Crime Information Bureau is dismissed cases, no prosecution, found not guilty. But those, you can't even remove those from CCAP. If, mm-hmm. You know, so we have two databases in Wisconsin. Both are visible electronically. It's just that one is a pay per use, which mm-hmm. is the CIB, and then CCAP is just free, open to all. So that's where most people are familiar with CCAP and not CIB, but he's absolutely right. You know, they don't match. They don't talk to each other. The state level and the county level, they don't talk to each other, so they don't tell people, you know, they don't let the state know, well, this record has been expunged. Can you expunge it as well? For some odd reason, they feel it necessary to keep those records regardless. And another thing I wanted to point out, that employers are not trained on how to read those records. The HR department, they just, if they see felony, they scroll through. They got hundreds of applicants. They're not going to sift through every single one. They see felony, you out, that's it, that's all. Not even read into the second page where it was probably reduced to a misdemeanor or thrown out entirely.
Yeah, yeah. So if somebody, Stephen, has a whole lot of money and faces one of these convictions, let's say for not something real low level, but maybe a drug offense, is it possible to hire an attorney, not you, of course, because you're morally not corrupt, I'm sure, but to hire somebody at a really high price because you have a whole lot of money, and then bypass the system so that, you know, it all gets expunged?
Well, I think really the biggest step needs to be taken at the time that somebody is accused. If you try and look at it years later, it's very, very difficult, if not impossible, to get something expunged. There was a fairly recent Wisconsin State Supreme Court decision that clarified that the statute says at the time of sentencing, expungement needs to be okayed.
Really?
And to go back and try and do something at a later date is sort of contrary to the statute. And while you may find a sympathetic circuit court judge willing to try and do that, it's very, very difficult.
Thank you very much. Simone,
It just seems really tough because a lot of people don't have the legal knowledge to know that they should be requesting that this be expunged at the time of sentencing, which is such an overwhelming time for so many people.
Well, and you were both saying a lot of the people you've been talking to didn't even know they committed a misdemeanor instead of a felony. They didn't know.
Yeah, a lot of people find out when they lose their jobs or when they're suddenly told that they have to move out of their apartment because the landlord or the Chicago Housing Authority pops up. They want to check.
Let's talk just a little bit about this article that caught our attention in The Atlantic, the unforeseen consequences of banning the box. When employers can't see applicants' criminal histories, they start discriminating in different and broader ways. This is a recent paper from the National Bureau of Economic Research, University of Virginia, and University of Oregon. Implementation of ban the box policies affected the probability of employment for young, low-skilled Black and Hispanic men, decreasing the probability of being employed by 5.1% for low-skilled Black men, 2.9% for young, low-skilled Hispanic men. So it may not work. If you have banned the box, people are going to discriminate against you in different ways and will on the basis of race. What do you think of this?
Well, so this is great research. We need more research on sort of the unintended consequences of banning the box. And this is, you know, this is showing there's some statistical discrimination that might happen, right, if we ban the box. One thing I would say is that statistical discrimination is actually illegal. We could actually enforce the illegality of statistical discrimination by running audit studies on employers and checking to see whether they're statistically discriminating. So if we had to ban the box and African-American men, for example, were less likely to be hired, that could be uncovered. So we could enforce the fact that statistical discrimination is illegal, but we don't. So if we want to ban the box, I think we also have to put into place other policies so that we don't have these unintended consequences, which could really harm communities of color.
Mm-hmm. Chanel, you want to comment?
I don't really have a response at this moment for that, but I just wanted to make mention that employment discrimination is nothing new. This is something that has been going on since either I or you was even born. Mm-hmm. It just shows up in different forms in different ways. And the mere fact that the same population of people that's always been discriminated against is the same population of people that is filling up our prisons, there has to be some coalition between.
More phone calls in a moment. 800-486-8655 is the number. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Two guests with us, Chanel McLeod, president of Clean Slate Milwaukee, a second chance organization providing reentry services for young adults. They are working on expungement of records. She spends all day, every day doing that. Professor Simone Ispalanda, assistant professor of human development and social policy at Northwestern University. Her latest paper is Indefinite Punishment and the Criminal Record, Stigma Reports Among Expungement Seekers in Illinois, to be published in the Journal of Criminology. Let's go to Reed in Clintonville next. Hi, Reed.
Yes, good afternoon. Say, just a question here, wondering whether or not regular people, but public figures or politicians who are convicted or at least accused of something. For instance, we have a lot of politicians who will sit in with another group and they are arrested. And I'm wondering if those kinds of things go on their records and if there's any study that's been done to expunge those from the records of public or political figures. And, for instance, we've had here in Wisconsin a Supreme Court judge who was accused of placing his hands around the neck of another Supreme Court judge. I don't know if he was charged or not, but if he were, was his record expunged, or will that remain with him the rest of his life, even though he's now retired and I'm sure doesn't need to work? But is it on his record? And do people in the political world or the public world have resources by knowing one another? Has research been done regarding that?
Yeah.
I'll hang up and listen.
Thanks for the call, Reed. Interesting question. Professor Ispalanda.
Yeah, I don't know of any research on that. I mean, the same laws apply to celebrities as apply to the rest of us, so I would assume that they have a criminal record. I think the difference is they probably don't need a job at a big box retailer, which will run a background check, or they don't need housing with a landlord that will check. But if someone's arrested, they should have a record.
Mm-hmm.
They will.
So it would disproportionately affect people who aren't making as much money.
Right. And I just wanted to go back to something you said before when you were asking if someone has the means and the resources to pay for their records to be expunged. The truth is, if you have that kind of money, you probably would have never got convicted in the first place. You know, you can actually get away with murder if you have a certain amount of money. So to respond to that, I don't know if there has been research done on maybe political figures that have been arrested and convicted or not. I'm sure they may be on CCAP just like everybody else, but I also know there's a thing called immunity where some people are immune, some people are not. Some people go see, you know, have their day in court. Some people have those connections to where they may never see their day in court.
Mm-hmm. Well, before we go back to phone calls, and we have many more, what kind of overhaul needs to be done here? What would you like to see happen? Simone?
I've given this a lot of thought. I mean, one thing I think we do need to think about is the fact that because the criminal record attaches to so many people, so one in three Americans, we need to distinguish we need to create policies that really distinguish among this population. So we have a lot of people with very low level criminal records, right, who really need to have this removed so they can go get a job. We have another group of people with more extensive criminal records, and we don't know yet. I mean, so right now they're ineligible for expungement anyway, right? So we need to think about kind of targeting policies that would help these different subgroups of the population that are affected by a criminal record. So I think part of the solution needs to be in thinking beyond, you know, one in three Americans has a criminal record and they're all the same. It's actually a really, really diverse population, and we need different services for people with different problems.
Shania?
Well, I long to see a day where a person is able to land a job based on skills and qualifications rather than their, you know, in their resume rather than their record. That's what I would like to see. I would like to see more policies, like she said, policies and procedures reformed, you know, in a way that is more equitable and more, you know, more fair for people and level the playing field a little bit, because we can't afford to continue the way that we are. We just can't. Like, we need people to get jobs. We need people to be able to take care of their own families. In California, there's another clean slate, so we're not the only clean slate. Let me just say, make mention of that. There's a Project Clean Slate in Portland, Oregon. There's a Clean Slate America in Baltimore, Maryland. And so the very first Clean Slate that was set up in Orange County, California, was a welfare to work program where they literally got people off of welfare and back into the workforce. And they don't have the problems that we have. They don't have the crime in the communities and the, you know, poverty level offenses that people people get. So what I'm saying is, what I would like to see is the criminal record not carry so much weight that, you know, the people are able to obtain, you know, positions based on, you know, their experience.
Right.
And so, and that's what I would like to see. I would like to see some employers be penalized for blanket discrimination. I would like to see housing and private landlords and property managers on a hook. But you know why that may not happen? It's because the Chamber of Commerce and property managers are the biggest funders of some of our elected officials. So we have a fight. There's a fight because they have lobbyists, they have unions, and they fund, you know, a lot of these campaigns. So that's where we're at.
Nancy in Franklin, hi.
Hi. The attorney that was on just a short time ago said about applying for expungement at the time of the crime. Our daughter, as a minor under the age of 19, had misdemeanor theft. Went through the whole process. She paid the restitution. She did the class, and we filed for expungement at the time. We were told by the attorney who handled her case that any future employment, it should not interfere. She applied for something as simple as daycare and, of course, filled out the application, did not claim that she had any kind of crime because she was told she shouldn't. They did the criminal background check that one of the other callers was talking about, where they go beyond CCAP. Because if you look on CCAP, her name is clean.
Right.
And, of course, then they told her she falsified the application. She is currently a college student pursuing an accounting degree and lives in utter fear that all this work will, again, be obstructed by this under the age of 19, and she has the expungement. So we talked to another attorney recently. That attorney told us she should go and get the expungement paper. We didn't even know there was such a thing. And when she applies for any professional job or even a common job like this at a daycare center, that she should upfront, you know, mark her, show the paper and mark that she had a misdemeanor crime. And she's terrified to do that,
right,
because she said they'll throw out her.
Exactly. Head. She probably wouldn't get the job. All right. We have about 30 seconds for a response. What should she do? And we're hearing story after story on this.
Yeah,
it's incredible.
These stories are a dime a dozen.
Yeah.
I mean, one thing we do need to pay attention to is the fact that very young people who acquire criminal records, I think we do need a special kind of solution for that, because so many young people get criminal records for such minor stuff,
right,
and it shouldn't follow them like this.
Yeah.
And my thing is, in you know, I was told that, you know, John Chisholm told me to tell somebody to do the exact same thing. But I'm like, how long is she going to have to show that paper? And I mean, to how many employers? Like, that's humiliating. Why would she want to?
And how many jobs won't she get? I know.
Right.
Thank you both so much. We could go for hours on this. We have tons of phone calls coming in. And thank you very much.
Thank you
for
so
being
much.
With us. Our thanks to Professor Simone Isbalanda, Assistant Professor of Human Development and Social Policy at Northwestern University. Her paper, Indefinite Punishment and the Criminal Record. We also thank Chanyelle McLeod. She is president of Clean Slate Milwaukee. They work on expungement. And thanks to Scotty Myers for producing this very interesting hour. And thanks to Scotty as well for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. News is coming up from NPR. We'll return and talk about summer reading with Nancy Pearl.